Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on 6/27, a day early.
You're going to throw them off.
That's because you're on a vacation starting tomorrow, so we're gonna miss next week. So people should be aware of that.
Yeah, if you're tuning in your clocks or you're setting your time to us, don't. But there's a lot going on, so we thought that even though I'm on a very early plane, I'm gonna be 24 hours in the air, from here to LA, LA to Hong Kong, Hong Kong to Rangoon.
Wow.
Yep, pretty exciting. So anyway, lots going on. We figured, with this whole Brexit fiasco going on, that we need to set the record straight.
I guess.
You did a great job with Curry yesterday on the No Agenda show, really covering everything there was to talk about and some of the ins and the outs and the whining and complaining and bitching in Scotland and all the stuff going on. That's pretty impressive.
Well, thanks.
As a matter of fact, Open the Channel. That's interesting. The Channel. What's going to happen with that?
Well, it's just a treaty between the two countries.
Yeah, taxes will go up.
I think it's privately owned anyway, or private government combination of some sort. But nothing's going to happen to it. But it would be funny. We talked about it on the show if the French got irked at the British, which they tend to do over the years, and just loaded up the or just. Took the trains off and said, okay, you guys, you got it. Just walk it out. Walk over there.
Well, I put a link to the No Agenda show, which, by the way, won a podcast award for the best news program. Adam always thinks it should be in comedy, right? But
well, he always thinks comedy, and he thinks he should get, and I think I agree with him on the second part, which is he should get best produced. Because he produces that thing on the fly in real time.
But they don't have a best produced over there. It's not best produced. They have the, what do they call it? The People's Choice Award.
No. They had best produced a few years ago.
Maybe they have something on the side.
They've always had People's Choice.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's go through Brexit for a second, because there was a major vote, as people know, and maybe if you don't know, basically there was a vote that the UK.
If you don't know, you shouldn't be listening to this show.
That's true. We've talked about it plenty. But the UK surprised us all. The votes came in close to 800,000 votes on the side of we are leaving the European Union. And now starts the whole problem from there. But you want to talk a little bit about kind of your side of what you see happened and kind of the workup to it and where we are now?
Well, the public decided in England, they've gotten fed up with a number of factors. There wasn't one thing that caused this. There was the meddling of the EU, the rulemaking, professional rulemaking they were doing. They have a factory of lawmakers in Brussels, and they're making all these laws that affect the British public. It affects small business a lot. You can't really even start a small business. You can't do organic anything. It's just a mess, and people got fed up with that. Then they got fed up with the overflow of too many immigrants who were flooding the system. And it wasn't necessarily people call it racist and all the rest. It just wasn't the case. I mean, there was an element here and there, for sure, because that's in every election. But it was mostly flooding the system, so that it was overburdening all the services. And so they had too many people coming in. They couldn't control that at all. Mm-hmm. And they were just fed up at some point. A lot of them just said, we want out. But unfortunately, the Scots and the Northern Irish said, no, we like the EU. I don't know what they get out of it, but this is going to cause further problems, because now these two sub-countries might have to break off from the United Kingdom. So it's a mess.
Yeah, it's a mess. I mean,
it caused the market to have a. Although when it first started, because I watched the whole thing change sides, come about, watch the vote come in, the market was down 705 points at the max. And so it ended up actually not going down as much. And I thought the market was pretty stable today.
Well, I mean, relatively speaking, the markets were stable. We saw that an initial reaction was that after the vote and the count and the initial tally and, kind of went in all sorts of directions. Don't forget, there was a major bid up into the vote where people thought that, hey, there's no way they're going to be siding with the leave side of things. And what happened was that there was a big bid up in the day, 2 days beforehand. Markets actually were locked down in limit on the S&P and on the Dow for about 30 minutes after the vote came in, after the tally came in. The day ended up that the Dow Jones on Friday was down 600 points. The S&P was down about 4%. Small caps down about 4%. Today, there was another 250 or 300 points to the downside on the Dow, another 2% on the S&P. Small caps were down about 3.5%. But the big moves that really occurred were in Europe. One of the most fascinating things I thought was that the UK was down only about 4% on the day after the vote. And we saw that Spain and Italy, Portugal down like 11 and 12%, 7% in Germany, 8% in the Nikkei, the Japan. China didn't seem to give a crap about anything. But it was the peripheral countries around Europe that really got just beat up pretty badly.
Do you have any explanation for that? Because I don't.
Well, I think some of it is that they think they're going to lose some of the business. Number one, the potential for the EU overall breaking up now. Now you're starting to hear some things out of Norway, and you're starting to hear some murmurs out of this one and that one. And I guess the whole idea is that without
Just to stop you there for a second, it's actually Sweden, Denmark, and Netherlands. Norway's not in the EU.
Maybe it's the Netherlands is the one that's...
Yeah, Netherlands is Netherlands. Next up.
There's some stink going on somewhere about another possible break. And I guess what's happening here is that the idea that one of the major anchors in the, you know, think of it like a strip mall. On one side, you got Macy's and you got, you know, Penny's and you know, some other crappy stores in there. Then you got all the little bitty stores in there. Well, one of the anchors is leaving. So maybe they're thinking
Macy's is leaving.
Macy's is leaving, and or maybe it's Harrods. Harrods is leaving. And they're thinking that maybe they're not going to get the flow and they're not going to get the business and there's going to be some problems. And, you know, there's maybe the potential for other. Now, I think they also believe that there is the potential for some further problems with those countries that may also have referendums in the future saying, you know what, we don't want to be a part of this either because the whole issue with Brussels and the problems with austerity. And I don't know, some of these things must be hitting them because, I mean, Greece was down 18% in the last couple of days.
Yeah, you know, when you look at all this stuff, you just see there's got to be opportunities left and right. I mean, I was watching Fast Money during this, the day of the episode, and there were while doing the show, they were buying Barclays.
Yeah, well, that's actually something we're going to talk about today because that didn't turn out too well so far. Barclays was down another 20% today.
I guess that was a bad idea.
Bad idea.
But Barclays will bottom out.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that. Actually, I don't want to give away what my particular picks are for the stocks for this time around, but let's just say that may be on there. Crude oil was down 5%. Gold was up 5%. The Bitcoin went flying higher. The big issue was the currencies. Currencies,
yeah.
I mean, really? You don't see, first of all, the British pound is now at the lowest point since 1985. That's
right. The way I see it, it's where it belongs, but.
Well, it may be. And you could actually go there and now buy things at a reasonable price.
Yes, I will go.
See?
I watched the currency expert, and he says that they are all these guys that are in that business. He says that they're targeting $1.10 for the euro, which is what it is now, pretty much.
Uh-huh.
So that's already reached its target. 95 cents for the yen.
Wow.
And $1.20 for the pound.
Which means that, let's just kind of talk about what that means. So if put the euro aside, if the yen goes to 95, that's another about 10% move on the yen, which would bring the move to about 25% for this year, if it does it this year. The pound at 120 weakening would also be very significant. That would also translate into a major rise for the US dollar, which would then smack the export driven companies in the US, hurt earnings, and obliterate oil, as I see it.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right.
So that then takes us into back where we were in the beginning of this year, and even maybe worst case scenario, because the dollar has moved so dramatically. And it would be also the idea that, well, probably the UK or whatever's left of that side of things, and Britain is in particular, is going to be in a recession, they say. That's by all accounts. The problem is that right now they don't have a government, or at least the government's starting to fall apart. We got Cameron who resigned. We got some of the other financial guys resigning. There's no potential interaction between the Eurozone now, because when they have the various meetings, they pulled out of those meetings. And there's a question there. There is also the fact that there's a lot of things up in the air about treaties, taxes, all sorts of things. Where are people going to be living? The question about the real estate market there that has been just incredibly hot for such a long time because of all the money that was being made from the financial pros over there.
Right.
I mean, just all sorts of, and not to mention, if nothing else, just the uncertainty over the next couple of years, because now they have to. So now this vote went into play, and it was, you know, they're saying it's not going to be reversed. Now they have to do this Article 50, which is their official, hey, we're leaving, and all the different things that go into the leaving. And that will take at least 2 years or more.
So, well, Juncker and a couple of the other presidents, they want to hurry this up, although Merkel's come out and said, nah, we don't want to hurry it up. We want to slow it down.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
But either way, they have up to 2 years. Even if it takes a quick time just to get this thing unwound, you know, you still have just all sorts of uncertainty going on in that country. And that is a major economy in the world to have that level of uncertainty about what's going to happen next. I mean, you can see it in their banks. Listen, the European banks down anywhere from 15 to 25% on the day after, plus another 15% today or so. We saw Deutsche Bank down another 17%, Santander 20%. RBS was down 27%. We saw Barclays down 22%. Banco Bilbao Vizcaya, Spanish, down 19%. In the U.S., the banks got hammered. J.P. Morgan was down 7%. Bank of America, 7%. Morgan Stanley, 10%. Goldman Sachs, 7%. And the smaller regional banks did better. Those companies and those banks and that don't have that global presence did much better. But then we had things like the European insurers. Did you look at these guys?
No, I missed that.
The day of, ING was down 19%. Aviva down 21%. Allianz, which is a European insurer, down 13%. And they're even got hammered again today. Hammered. You know, Barclays was down, what'd I say, 22%. It was down another 20% today. Royal Bank of Scotland, another 15, 16% today. Then you had the airlines. International, like Delta, down 8%. American Airlines did 11.5%. Regionals did better. Total of $2 trillion, maybe $2.5 trillion were lost over the last couple of days in the markets.
Yeah, well, you know, there's still the market's not at a low. It's not in the 16,000s. It's or lower, but I mean, it's not. I think that's a specious, you know, this down X number of trillion. I've heard it a lot. I think it's just some sort of a scare tactic number because the market's been lower. And it can go up the next day. I mean, it just doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah. It was the worst day in dollar terms of losses in history from a global
standpoint. Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm talking about in a global standpoint. Mm. So it was pretty. Now, what's really interesting is the things that benefited. So there was, again, the shock kind of hit everything, and especially because a lot of money was pushed into the markets in the days up, going up into the vote. So therefore, that had to be unwound. Okay, fine. Because it didn't go that the way it was supposed to go. Bonds did really well. Really well. As a matter of fact, today, I believe it was today, the 10-year Treasury hit an all-time low yield. 1.45%.
Yeah, that's something.
Mm-hmm. Now, I put together just to show you just the depths of how things were. The day after the Brexit vote where things fell apart, I put a list of the European ETFs on that day, how poorly they did. And some of these are because of currency moves, et cetera. But the number one position on the downside was Greece. The Greek ETF was down 17%. Financials overall in Europe were down 16%. Spain down 15%. UK was down 12%. Because, again, they were down 4 or 5%, but then you add about 7 or 8% for the currency move, so that kind of hurt them there. France down 11%, Sweden down 10, kind of list goes down and down and down. But then I also put on here, like, the China large cap was down 6%, not that bad. Korea down 5%, Taiwan down 5%, Mexico was down 7%. So overall, it was a pretty ugly situation here. The question is it time to buy these beaten down names? Now, these are companies, many of these financials in particular, were beaten down. How many times do we talk about Deutsche Bank and Credit Suisse, right?
Yeah.
So the question is, now they just got totally their legs cut out from underneath them. Is it time to maybe look at these, I guess, right?
I would think so. I mean, there's two possibilities of what this could trigger a bigger problem, which is a cyclical part of the business cycle. And this could be a triggering mechanism, so things could really get bad, which is a possibility. But I personally don't see it that way, and I think that there's some opportunities here.
Yeah, I think that as well. I mean, until we have to get the sting removed first, right? The concern, the people are freaking out, with the uncertainty.
Yeah.
But I agree that there is some opportunities here. They're not going to let these banks go under.
No, that doesn't seem likely.
Right. I wonder if one thing, I was thinking about this, is it possible that these banks are getting hurt because if they are outside of the EU and don't have access to the ECB money that maybe can come into the various banking systems through bond purchases and a variety of quantitative easing, that maybe they're saying, well, these banks don't have that anymore. I mean, they still have the UK, right?
And yeah, but the ECB money is just like crummy compared to the Federal Reserve money.
Right.
And we throw money at these guys.
Yep. And again, you still have the UK with their quantitative easing programs, whatever else they're doing on their side. So I'm not sure if that was it, or maybe they just thought there's going to be a loss of all of that potential. I mean, these banks got hit really hard, like absurdly hard. As a matter of fact, trading in Barclays and RBS were suspended today for a short period of time as they were, they hit their triggers, and then they opened back up and all that. So, but here's a couple of things. The idea of this Brexit, and using these fun names to name things, Brexit, Britain exiting the European Union. The question is, if there was others, we know there was Grexit, that was Greek possibly leaving, right?
Right.
And I saw a lot of other names floating around on Twitter that I thought were interesting if other countries go through the same process. So you have, for example, Departigal.
Nexit. Yep. You got Nexit.
Nexit,
which is number one.
Yep. Departigal.
Pexit?
Pexit.
Portexit. I have no idea.
Departigal. Departigal. Is
Portugal. Departigal. You change the idea.
Yeah. It'll leave.
It'll leave.
How about
that's good? Are you writing this material yourself?
No. I stole this from some guy on Twitter. I gave him props somewhere on Twitter. Here's one: Fruck off.
What's that from the
French? Yeah.
Fruck off.
Check out.
Yeah, it's all good.
Austria. How about Finnish?
Finnish.
Yep.
Is good.
Slavlong. Latvia. Bygium, and until there's nobody left and all you have left is germ lonely.
Well, you'd also have Croatia. They didn't dream one up for them, but it would be croak.
You got to come up with something. And then crazy. And then you have the other things that I thought were really interesting over the last couple of days. All these experts who said, there's no chance that it's not going to happen. This Brexit, no. 90% they're going to remain, 10%. Not to mention the betting sites. Let's even throw that whole thing out.
That's unbelievable, the bettors making that, blowing it that way.
Yeah, who knows how much rigging there was in that whole deal. They put the odds so low for this thing, and then it comes out the other direction. They should have just probably blown up. That they have betting on this anyway is a whole different discussion. Mm, seems a little bit absurd.
Betting on everything. Yeah, there.
I know. But you had all these experts and all these commentaries and all these very highly placed politicians from the IMF and the Treasury and all these other places around. you know, with all their expert opinion, right? And they come out with all this discussion about what now IMF Lagarde, who she's always wrong, it seems to me. Her commentary is markets got Brexit vote wrong. Don't panic. Don't panic. They got it wrong. But don't panic. So I'm not sure if she's saying that the markets got it wrong, that they were buying into it beforehand, or the markets got it wrong that, hey, it's not so bad, you shouldn't be selling things off, which is what I would think she's saying, because her job is to calm things down.
Yeah, I would think, I would hope that's what she's saying.
Yeah, I would hope so too. But and that's their job. They're cheerleaders. And I don't mean that in any negative connotation. They're cheer. That's what they do.
Yeah, yeah, CNBC.
Yeah, exactly. So the question is, where do markets go from here? You know, you have a lot of these experts that were totally wrong going into this. And now they're giving us
still wrong.
And then now they're giving us advice. Are we supposed to take this? I mean, really, come on. This is so stupid. All these players out there giving bad advice all along and now saying, and knowing, by the way, that fundamentals on the U.S. markets were not really great. That doesn't mean you shouldn't be in good stocks. That doesn't mean you should be out of the markets. But, you know, we knew fundamentals were questionable. So you really shouldn't have been ramped up and levered up in the investing, even though things were looking pretty snappy for a while there. But, you know, they're coming out with all this bad advice, and now they're back giving advice again. Somebody should say to him, you know what, maybe you shouldn't be talking. Maybe we should turn his mic off.
Yeah, time out.
Yeah. So big question is, where do we go from here? So I don't know what you see, but I'm looking at a 1930 to a 1950 range on the S&P 500, which is a drop of about another, what, 3%, 4%? Okay. That would be in line with what I see relative value on fundamentals. Now, if in fact the UK actually goes into a recession, and if this does kick off any further backlash into our economy and the dollar does move a lot higher, that number would be questionable, and you have like 1895 as a level of support. I just can't imagine that, just from what I've seen over the last, I don't know, last year or so, that this is going to be the item that just takes everybody and just says everybody's going to throw out their stocks and be done with it. You know, unless oil caves again or something else happens.
I agree 100%.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't even know if these numbers that you're predicting are even going to be achieved.
I mean, my number's not that far off from here.
Well, the question I would ask is, how long is what we're seeing right now today, the kind of the downturn, and then the follow-up, how long is this going to go on? We're going to have down tomorrow, down the next day. Is it going to be down for a week? Is it going to be down, or is it going to start to turn around? Is it going to go neutral tomorrow, or is it going to go up? Or is it going to a boom? Or, I mean, some people, you know, the way I saw the analysis, at least the way I was going to reverse engineer it, would be the following. Because of the Brexit vote, we're not going to have any more interest rate hikes.
Yep.
Let's buy stock.
Right, right. That's true. That there's definitely some truth there. I mean, right now the probability of an interest rate hike in the U.S. is like none.
Right, for the rest of the entire year.
You know, easily for the rest of the year.
Right. And so that's what I'm thinking. And the only reason I'm saying that is because that has kind of been the preoccupation with the market for the last couple of years. Right. Oh, interest rates, interest rates, interest rates. The market went up. Why did it go up? Because they didn't raise the interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
And that rationale, I mean, it could be bogus. The rationale could be bogus. It could have been bogus for the last couple of years, but that's not the way I'm interpreting it. I'm interpreting it as, no, this is the real driving force right now. And what we've seen means no interest rates hikes.
What's interesting also is that we have, as I mentioned earlier, the treasury, the yield on the 10-year treasury is at 1.45% or so. Again, lowest on record, with the fact that, you know, the Fed was potentially going to raise, not saying they're going to, but what they said they were going to do. With the unemployment rate at 4.7%, with manufacturing being okay, with confidence being okay. And this is, you know, it looks like a system shock rather than, as I guess you're saying, is a fundamental change in what's going on underlying the entire markets.
And here's a question for you. Where's this bond collapse that was predicted a couple of years ago?
Yeah. Amazing, isn't it? The whole idea, the whole idea was that there was so much debt on the books of companies and on the governments, and any slight movement to the upside from a normalization of rates would just totally throw this whole thing out of whack and kill it. And here we are at the lowest.
And that was supposed to, if I'm not mistaken, that was supposed to be sometime in late 2014 or 2015.
Yep, 2014. That's when the whole thing really started. I said, you know what? How many more bonds can we buy for a portfolio at these rates? I'm very nervous. So we shortened down duration. We took our maturities way down. And, you know, it's still, there's not that much of a differential between the long and the short in terms of overall yield at this point. The yield curve is really moderated significantly and compressed. But still, I'll tell you right now, for the last couple of years, I've been very nervous, like, how much lower can this go? And then you had the Fed basically telling you that, well, it's not going to go much lower. We're going to start raising rates. So you're like, okay, well, I'm not going to at least pile into any of the long bonds. And then you see this kind of thing happening. And negative yields in Europe, and negative yields, the lowest on record in all sorts of places.
Yeah.
And now you have to say to yourself, well, if it was bad back then, it's even worse now, the potential for this thing to move up. Even if we just normalize back to 2%, that's a big move on the Treasury.
It's outrageous.
But we'll see. I mean, obviously people are looking to... Listen, if someone's willing to put their money with the German or Japanese government, either one, and actually be guaranteed to lose money on their bond by the time it matures, they must be giddy about buying 1.5% bonds in the U.S.
They're flocking. That's why it went to that rate.
Exactly. And the Fed's sitting there going, yeah, yeehaw, this is awesome. Meanwhile, what's really funny is the dollar comes down a bit, yields on our bonds go down, we're in a potential interest rate hike mode, not really, but that's what they were saying, our economy's doing better, and our dollar's been relatively stable. Meanwhile, we have the lunatics in Europe and in Japan talking it up constantly that they're going to continue to press on negative rates, and their currencies are going higher, or had been going higher, which is a little bit nutty. Kind of worked against them. They should have shut their mouths.
Yeah, well, this, whatever happened, it put a stop to it.
Yep. So let me tell you what's going on this week. There's some interesting things happening this week. On Tuesday, tomorrow, an EU leadership summit begins in Brussels. Now, one of the things that's interesting is that some of that's been canceled. The Sinatra panel, whatever that is, Yellen pulled out, and I think somebody from the UK pulled out, and then Draghi pulled out because of all this that's going on. So there's kind of a big concern about all the different players that are trying to keep things status quo with their meetings, with their conferences, with their speeches, that just can't do it right now.
Yeah, because they can't answer any questions.
Exactly. And by all accounts, everybody that I've been listening to and watching that I respect has been talking about how badly the Euro area, all the different speakers have been blowing it. And just look like bumbling idiots on this. Then we have Conference Board, the Confidence Index coming out for last month. April Case-Shiller Home Price Index. Oftentimes, by the way, this is a day, this Tuesday, which is right up until month end, usually about 3 or 4 days until month end, is a day that we see things starting to turn if markets aren't extremely happy. And I think it has to do with, we have the final estimate of quarter one GDP coming out. We have Nike report coming out. But I think it's more so like the window dressing. Getting things in the portfolio, end of quarter this month. And the potential for them to possibly start bidding things up. I would not be totally surprised. I have a couple of readings on some of my indicators that we use that are the lowest I've seen since, I'll call it January, February 2016. We have a pretty strong negative reading oversold on a couple of the indicators. Not all of them, but on a couple.
Huh. Well, I wouldn't be surprised. Oversold in a situation like this is pretty much goes with it.
This on Wednesday, the one the meeting that was supposed to be between, this is the one that I was talking about, Federal Reserve Janet Yellen, ECB Draghi, and Bank of England's Governor Mark Carney. Carney was supposed to be in a panel discussion at the ECB forum in Portugal. That's gone. We're going to see pending home sales, May personal spending figures, and a couple of different earnings coming up. And Thursday, we have some other earnings that will be interesting to watch. Darden, Constellation Brands. Friday, we're going to see the ISM June U.S. manufacturing PMI and China's latest factory PMI reading. So it's going to be kind of interesting, we'll see what happens there. Now, a couple other things that I wanted to bring up to you because I thought this was pretty fascinating. On Friday with the market swoon, starting in the morning, early morning, things got really ugly. They got messy. It was not a very logical trade session early on, especially, right? People were positioning and undoing and all that. Well, it turns out, and we found this out kind of on the sideline, there was not a lot of news on this, that a very popular platform for robo advising, you know, this robo trading or robo, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the robo stuff.
Yep. Company called Betterment, which is one of the bigger ones. I had actually the CEO, young guy on my show one time, the Disciplined Investor, shut down trading from the morning through the early afternoon. Just shut it down. Worrying they couldn't get the right trading in going and all that. And I was really like, you know what? This is the point and the problem with all this. People go into these deals like this Robinhood app or, I'm not saying they were down, but you know, these various things that don't charge you and you don't have to deal with anybody. You can go on an app, just invest your money in $10,000, $15,000, $100,000, whatever it is. You know, you don't have anybody there holding your hand at all. Customer service is non-existent probably. And, you know, you're dealing with just an app and technology. And if they just push a button and shut it down, you're screwed. So all these players that wanted to, you know, be involved in this very inexpensive thing, like what could go wrong? Well, yeah. What could happen? It's, you know, it's technology. This stuff, I mean, if I want to call my broker, maybe it wouldn't take my call. Maybe his phone line was down. Maybe his internet's down. But I got this. I got it right on my phone. It's going to work. No problem. And meanwhile, they shut it down for all sorts of reasons that are still unknown. Or maybe they shut it down.
I would like to know what the reasons were. I would suspect it's because they don't have, they can't get in the queue, and you're going to get screwed if you do any work.
Exactly. So now let's back that up. How do you feel about that at this point then?
Well, that means that the service is fine if everything is running according to Hoyle and you have one little, you know, some action, which right. is, you know, something that changes the structure or people go crazy or there's a panic or something like that. You're just done. You're just stuck in your position. Right. You're never going to be able to trade any which way.
And I mean, this was a big move. Don't get me wrong. But you know what? You know, I don't know if you, as an investor, if you're not an active investor and you got a 20-year horizon, you're not going to touch your money and who cares? Okay, fine. Now, maybe you wanted to make a trade because you thought it was a really good time to do so. Maybe things were down.
Well, you may have had a hot, you know, you really sense what was going to happen and you have a short, you wanted to execute it.
Yep.
Because you're going to make a killing and they're just shut you down. You can't get in at all.
Right. And again, this is a more of a asset allocation rotation type of deal where you do a rebalancing and your money goes. But still, I find it very disheartening that, you know, that one of the problems, and this is more of a observation, there is a place for we'll call it direct investing where you don't need anybody at all. But somewhere in between of the technology and someone who could be there from whether it's customer service or an advisor or somebody that can actually help you is probably this is a wake up call. This is probably a good idea. And as a matter of fact, we're designing a robo type of strategy where we're taking some of our strategies, we'll put it on that kind of platform. We're in the development of it right now. There is no way though we would ever let it be fully automated. 100%
autonomous.
It's no way. So we'll see what happens when the cars start being fully autonomous. If the same thing happens, you know, all the they go on strike all at once. So we'll see what happens there. But I can't even
imagine what happens when some hackers go after these things.
Yeah, and who knows if that's what it was and just covered it up. But just a word of warning that you know, if it's free and if it's cheap, maybe you're getting what you're paying for. And maybe while, yeah, I can show you on paper that if you just in the S&P 500 ETF over time and, you know, you didn't worry about the market swings, you were a lot better off and all that. But maybe there was something to be said about some outside help with some of this. And it isn't as easy as just clicking a few buttons on an app like it's a game.
Okay. I agree with you.
On Twitter, Someone asked this morning, actually it was Herb Greenberg, who I follow. He said, has anybody heard anything from the Queen on this Brexit thing?
You know, we talked about this in the show a little bit.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I saw what she said.
Oh, what did she say?
She said, well, yes, Brexit. I'll have truffled eggs, a butter muffin with gooseberry jam, and tea. Two lumps, please.
Yeah, I definitely need the toast.
Well, anyway, that was my commentary. What were you saying?
We don't know what she was thinking. I think she was for the Brexit. Why would she not be?
Yeah.
She's losing. I mean, the country loses sovereignty being in the EU, and her kingdom is like going to be under the thumb of the Germans for all practical purposes. I don't see why she'd be for the stay campaign.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me. But
yes,
she's not going to come out and say anything.
No.
Because I think she just didn't want to meddle. But I would be stunned if she was for staying in the EU personally.
Yeah, she's.
I suggested that maybe she's behind the whole thing.
Oh, she's a smart one, that Queenie. If she came out and said, you know, whatever the people decide, that should be the decision. Okay, fine. You know, I mean, that'd be good. But then again, if she comes out and she supports that it looks like she's against the current government, and really, in the fact is, she's the Queen of England. It's a position of, it's an honorary position, right? I mean, she's she can't make any rules. She can't say.
Nobody believes that, by the way, what you just said.
Nobody believes what?
That this is an honorary position and she's powerless.
Nobody believes it, or it is not. That's not true. Which one?
It's not. It's okay. Sorry, I got something in my mouth.
Yeah, I can see the gooseberry jam you're eating.
Let me swallow. It's not true.
It's not true.
She still has to approve all. I mean, there's no. This is the kingdom. It's. I mean, it looks as if she's just there for show, but she's got too much wealth. I mean, the whole thing is. It's not believable.
Well, then she. So we. Hold on a second. But in a governmental position versus her having some sway. Are you saying she has to approve all the bills?
No. There's certain fundamental things that she has to approve.
So you're talking about like
she has
sovereignty. Sovereignty
the guy
seems
they
to be
is
one.
The prime minister.
Yeah, it would seem like the sovereignty would be the one that
you cannot go. You're right. You cannot just pick any old prime minister unless the queen says it's okay. So in other words, you brought in a communist for some odd reason. You brought in some. Maniac, some screwball, she would not approve it and it wouldn't happen.
Hmm.
Now, a lot of people, Americans especially, think what you think, which is us bullshit. She's just a joke. And there's a lot of, there's an anti-monarch movement that doesn't think it's that much of a joke. They'd love to get rid of her.
Hmm. I've never seen her involved in anything, but I guess it's all behind the scenes of what you're telling me. I'll believe you on this, but because I've only from what I've seen on this and I've really not studied it, but, okay, seems a little bit old too, and kind of crotchety.
Yeah, well, she's in her 90s, so she's going to be crotchety.
I mean, but who else is it? The rest of the family also has overriding authority?
No, she's the queen. She's the boss.
She's the boss.
But when she dies, which will be in the next 10 years, then you have a new guy. Prince of Wales will be the king.
Right. Well, let's shoot on over to the DH Unplugged, close to the pin competition, because I tell you something, things switched around very quickly because Friday was the end date and price for Biogen. And what people may have thought they were close, that disappeared very quickly.
Joke was on them.
We picked a high price stock this time, thought it would have a lot more volatility, or at least a larger range of the potential price, and therefore make it a little bit more difficult. And it was, in the end, actually, things, like I said, turned around pretty significantly. But the winner of the close to the pin for Biogen was Michael P. And he came in 0.29%, 67 cents away.
Yeah, and that was good.
Yeah, this thing moved like 5. Listen, I was 5.5% away. You were 6% away. Average price was right about 5.5% away for all of the listeners who participated in this. So pretty amazing. Rob F. was the runner-up. He was just 88 cents away. So pretty close.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by these guys who can nail this. Although it's a scattershot thing, I believe, but I could be wrong.
This one was because, like I said, it dropped pretty significantly the day of the when it ended. Next up is Nike. Nike's going to be coming out with their earnings actually tomorrow. And right now we have still openings. You can put your entry in for Nike. And that stock has not actually been doing as well as you would have hoped, considering how great their last earnings was. Not only were their earnings great, but their orders, their projected orders and orders pending and back orders and all that were just dramatic. They were saying things were okay in China. So it's going to be interesting to see what they have to say this time. But it is open. You could go over to DH Unplugged, and you can go over to the little thing that says close to the pin. It's open for another so long, and click in and add your price. You could possibly win one of the very highly coveted DH Unplugged t-shirts, which people are banging me to buy every day.
Yep. Not going to happen.
Not happening.
Another reason we can't do it for people who complain about this, we're not really a store.
For the right price. Well, it depends on the price.
It's a mess.
Yeah. Well, we could do it as...
So we can give these away, but we can't sell them.
Right. Now, update on the Global Millennials Thematic ETF Challenge. Back to being neck and neck again because this thing dropped off a cliff. We had all of the Millennial ETF and all those names really get smacked, while some of the other players actually held up pretty well. I mean, you know, you look at a company like a DaVita, dialysis and healthcare, Tootsie Roll for that matter. Tootsie Roll a little bit different. They are publicly traded, which is the funny thing about them. And actually, you should see all the candies they have. You're like, yeah, I like that one. Oh, yeah, I remember that one. A lot of them are the old time candy. Remember what kind of candy did you like as a kid? Did you have a particular candy?
I liked the Charleston Chew.
Oh, yeah. They hurt your jaw after a while, though, didn't it?
Well, it depends.
Yeah.
And then...
Back up.
Depending on how stale it was.
Did you freeze it or did you eat it warm?
I've done both. Yeah. When I was a kid, I don't remember freezing it, but that's something you do when you get older and you think it's cool. Abba Dabba, I think, was similar. It's a similar product. I liked the Forever Yours, which is a candy that's disappeared and it's become the Milky Way Dark Chocolate.
Mm.
Forever Yours was a Milky Way Dark Chocolate. They renamed it to Milky Way Dark Chocolate. And I used to, when I was real little, I was in the third grade, I liked the Three Musketeers bars.
Oh, yeah.
That had the little lines in them, and you could break it into three pieces, and that's hence the name Three Musketeers.
Mm-hmm.
You could split it amongst your friends. And then they made the thing bigger, and then they took the things out, and I don't know what they were thinking.
Hmm.
Somebody came in, some new guy. What's these indentations doing here? Let's get rid of that.
I liked, in my day, back when, it was the $100,000 bar.
Yeah, I remember that.
But I think now it's like...
That was a nut bar, I believe.
It was with Rice Krispies. And like Carmel.
Right, Rice Krispies.
I think it's like the $1 million, or, you know, inflation, right? It's a million or the $10 million bar, 100 grand billion bar now or something
billion
like that.
Billion dollar bar.
Yeah, something like that. There was also, I'm trying to think of the one with the peanut butter something that I liked. There was some kind of peanut, it was a chew.
Reese's?
No, I like Sugar Daddies.
Reese's are pretty new. Yeah, I like Sugar Daddies too, or Sugar Babies.
Sugar Babies, yeah. There's another thing I used to eat too. It had like a peanutty flavor.
But the malted milk duds.
Milk duds I like, but not the molten ball, the balls. The malt balls. Chocolate malt balls? Is that what it was?
Milk duds.
Milk duds are good, but those also hurt your teeth after a while. Snickers. Snickers are always good. But I'm not a big chocolate guy.
That tells me something.
Yeah, no, I could. I mean, I like more tart, not lemony, but Jolly Ranchers.
Sweet tarts.
No, those are the top. Or the other ones you used to. The one you used to dip the little stick in and lick it, dip it and stick.
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
No, not so good. When I went to camp when I was a kid, my grandfather's very dear friend was the owner of Now and Later Candies.
No.
And when I went to camp, he sent me cases at a time, which then translated to I had friends from the beginning.
Yeah, you met a lot of friends.
Anyway. Let's kind of go over to this discussion about some hate crimes and continue on our discussion on Brexit on our special Brexit edition of the DH Unplugged show. It seems like there's some news coming out. I'm not sure where this is coming from or if it's just to make it so that the side that didn't want the Brexit is trying to show all the reasons that how awful this is. But hate crimes are on the rise in England now. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I'm skeptical.
Yeah, I don't. You know, you got a guy on there. He's got like a gash on his eye that looks like it's days old, by the way. And he's like, "Yeah, oh, yeah, some guy hit me and this and that." And I'm thinking,
ugh. Yeah, I'm not buying any of this.
Yeah, me neither. Barron's cover this week.
Oh, your favorite magazine. Yeah.
You got to love the Barron's cover. U.S. companies depend on domestic customers. Therefore, it's going to help insulate them from problems. Now, there's some truth in that, by the way. As a matter of fact, this weekend.
Jeez, why don't you state the obvious?
Yeah, so this weekend I was talking about, and by the way, it's only in certain circumstances. So in this weekend on the Disciplined Investor, I was talking about, you know, there are some stocks that probably could do well. For example, I mentioned one in particular. I mentioned Kroger. I mean, where is Brexit going to do anything to Kroger? Supermarket.
I don't know that there's any Krogers anywhere but the U.S., so probably nothing.
Nothing. Stock was up 3.5% today.
Ah, there you go.
Dr. Pepper Schnepel.
What about Publix? Did it go up too?
It probably. It's public. It's privately traded. It's private.
Oh, that's company. Right. Yeah. We talked about this before, I just cannot believe that it's privately held, right. Which just bugs me.
But you know, you look at some of these companies that are domestically driven, primarily domestically driven, without any, you know. So you have problems with maybe real estate, with currency issues, with foreigners coming in, and maybe the dollar moves up too much. But you know, again, Kroger's. Or other supermarkets, not the same. Companies that don't have internet-based businesses where they may have people from outside buying things like an Amazon, which may be internet, you know, global. But company really core U.S.-based companies, even the airlines that are U.S.-based domestic only, putting aside any oil issues, of course.
Yeah, Southwest, we'll say.
Yeah, Southwest.
Although they go to Canada a little
Allegiant,
bit.
Allegiant Airlines.
Yeah,
possibly. JetBlue. Well, JetBlue to a degree, also same as Southwest. But you know, you look at these companies, and these companies, I would tend to agree that if you have that kind of company, which is not reliant on foreign anything, doesn't have any problem with oil or relation to commodities, and is a staple.
If anything, the oil prices are going to benefit those companies.
Right. That's true, also. So interesting, but I think, of course. It had to be the first thing they put out because they have to also cheerlead for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Chinese authorities will require Baidu and other search engines to report banned content and verify advertisers' qualifications in its latest attempt at internet regulation. As of August 1st, search engines operating in the country will be prohibited from providing banned information. Now, if the information was banned, I don't know why they could do it in the first place, but now they're going to be prohibited from providing the banned information. You follow what I'm saying here?
Yeah, it's funny.
Okay. So now it's illegal to provide the illegal information in various formats, including links, summaries, cache pages, associated words. Now, when I was in China last year, I had to have a VPN because you just can't get a lot of stuff. You know, you can't get Google. Sometimes you can, but most of the time you can't. Gmail is out. So you get a VPN and all that. I don't know if they're going to make the VPN process somehow illegal. I don't know.
It's going to be difficult. There's a lot of very interesting protocols involved with a good VPN, and it's pretty hard to disallow these things because the system kind of encourages it. I don't know. I mean, I think there's ways you could probably see a VPN and then just cut it off in some way, I suppose. But a lot of VPNs are necessary in the world of business so you can get on your office's network.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't tell that kind of a VPN from one, you know, screwing around. It's impossible. It's a VPN. Unless right. you crack the passcodes that involve the back and forth of data going from here to there and onto your machine, which you can't really. VPNs are pretty cool.
They're cool because, I mean, if you want to do things like use... certain services, for example, let's say Pandora. So I'm in China or wherever I'm at, and Pandora is not available there. So what you do is you use a VPN and you just tunnel through and you get, it looks like you're in America or somewhere else. Now,
and it's also good if you want to watch English television.
Right.
They cut you off, but you go on a VPN, you go into London, you're coming out of London, you look like you live in London, and you can get all this stuff.
Right.
We need this sort of thing for the No Agenda show because we got a lot of foreign stuff that we deal with.
So I was thinking that while I can also use an HTTP proxy, right? Can I put the proxy server in
that
there?
Yeah, but that doesn't work as well.
Right. But I mean, that's good for like a Pandora and stuff, just to spoof them where you're from.
Maybe.
I got to get a couple of names from that before I go away. I don't have the VPN up because they said supposedly the internet's fine there. It's not really good, the internet, but it doesn't block you either. I guess
there are services that crop up every so often, and the VPN guys, and luckily there's like so many VPN guys that there's ways around this, but there are blacklists of IP addresses that the VPN will be coming out of in different parts of the world. Because I'm using a VPN, generally speaking, to keep my machines safer from worms and other sorts of things that get on the net. And because they have to go through the VPN, and their VPN guys have got better security than I do. But once in a while you go, you're blocked. You can't get on this site because your IP address somebody had it for a while and used it for spamming. And it gets on a blacklist. And that problem does exist.
Yeah. So that's going to be going on in China. We'll see how that plays out because, obviously there's been a lot of weird things. And I guess that there's been some things on Baidu. There was pharmaceuticals that were being sold, and a couple of people died due to taking it and some terrible things. A couple other things before we get into our discussion of the stocks this time. First of all, watch China's currency lowest in years as the safe haven trades are preferred, even though, China's... It's kind of been a devaluation by others, not by China this time. I don't know if you saw this, but New York's landmark Waldorf Astoria Hotel is scheduled to close in the spring of 2017.
Is that for an upgrade?
Nope.
They're going to tear it down?
They're going to convert it to a 1,400-room luxury condominium.
Wow.
And this is owned by Anbang Insurance Company. Now, remember that the years ago when Japan was buying up all the properties and various businesses in the U.S., China's been doing that. China and Bang Insurance Group is now converting the Waldorf Astoria to a condominium. How sad is that?
That's pathetic.
Yep. Mm.
I think there's a rail tracks underneath that building. That's where, if I'm not mistaken, that's where FDR used to come in on a private car and a private station.
Isn't that close to it's close to Grand Central, isn't it?
I don't know. Yeah, it is. I know, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's walking distance. Mm.
And they already closed the Bull and Bear Club that was at that. I think it was at the Waldorf. That was a very famous thing. Quick story about the Bull and Bear Club. I was there one time. Very nice little place, kind of New York, Wall Street kind of after hours, after work kind of place. And I was there talking to somebody, and I'm talking, and my back is to the door, and I'm walking out. And I turn to my left and face to face, like almost nose to nose to me, when I turned, Evander Holyfield.
Oh,
that scared the crap out of me.
Well, he's a scary guy.
He is a scary dude. He's got a face that's like chiseled and hard, he's like a rock. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
anyway,
I got to see one of his boxing matches once, and it was quite the thing to see.
Yep. Last thing here, let's see. Hawaii's governor signed a bill making the first state to place residents who own firearms in a federal criminal record database and monitor them for possible wrongdoings anywhere in the country.
Read this to me again.
Hawaii's governor signed a bill making it the first state to place its residents who own firearms in a federal criminal record database and monitor them for possible wrongdoings anywhere in the country.
Huh. I'd be irked about that if I was a Hawaiian.
Yep. Yep.
That might be unconstitutional.
Really? There's a federal... they're going to put him in the federal criminal...
It just reeks of being unconstitutional, so that'll just go to the Supreme Court, and that'll be the end of it.
Yeah. Let's see, what else? And what are you writing for PC Mag this week? And did you get any blowback on that Microsoft article you wrote, or the Apple article you wrote?
Of course. Apple hater.
I got something today.
It's going to be some random complaint. Yeah. So it's nothing interesting this week.
Nothing this week. Just a random rag. All right, well, first of all, you can listen, of course, to the award-winning No Agenda show. You like that?
Yeah, I do. I like the award-winning No Agenda show.
Yeah, the award-winning and very popular and globally recognized No Agenda show with John C. Dvorak and Adam Curry each and every week. Did you do three shows this week or just two?
No, we just did the same two. We always do. Yeah. Just one. The first Sunday show, which was about the Brexit, was extremely long. It went 3 hours and 6 minutes.
Wow. Well, well done, and well-deserved award, by the way, and a long time in coming. You listen to him, the No Agenda Show, at No Agenda Stream, noagendashow.com. Of course, over there you can find out all of that, and read John C. Dvorak on PC Magazine. Follow him on Twitter, at The Real Dvorak. Myself, Andrew Horowitz, one word, on Twitter as well. We're going to take a look at some of the stocks to watch. By the way, all the information we talked about today is on the show notes over on DH Unplugged. Just click it and drop it down. You'll see all this good stuff and charts and things and stuff that you want to follow along with. And you can follow us on, get this on iTunes, listen to it on the site or whatever it may be. But let's take a look at some of the stocks. I'm sure you probably know, but this is not an offer to buy or sell any security. This is just a game that we play. Don't get caught up in the moment and just say, oh, I'm going to buy what they say, and do some research. Make sure that you go to a financial advisor that's professional. John C. Dvorak, myself, Horowitz Company clients may own any of the stocks, and we will duly note those on the list. As you would probably guess, John.
Most of whipsawed. Yeah,
exactly. Which is really interesting.
As soon as this thing happened, I figured, oh, there goes the stock list. We have to rebuild it. And every stock got wiped out except two.
Yeah, two or three, yeah. Two? Yeah, two.
No, two. I'm looking at two.
No, Advanced Auto Parts, too. It's good.
Oh. Is that right?
It's gray. It's not orange.
Right, it's gray. Okay, everyone but three. Those actually, two of the three are up, including the triple bottom one that you picked, which was a winner. And Advanced Auto Parts, I guess, is hanging in there, barely. And then I don't have anything left. Oh, I have Advanced Auto Parts, which is up a little. And then there's another one that's kind of hanging in. It's a 1% down short, and it is just dead money, but that's fine. The ones that got wiped out were kind of disappointing. We've lost to Bank of the Ozarks, I would hope, would have stayed put.
But what does that have to do with Brexit?
Yeah, nothing. Shouldn't have gone down. That was just the kind of the mob reaction, which is why I think most of these got wiped out from mob reaction.
Yeah.
Group Applied think. Optoelectronics, which I is still being bought up. It got wiped out, and I'm going to put that up back on my list.
Redo. We need like a sound effect for a redo.
Yeah, well, we don't do it that much.
AAOI. Got
it. But there is, AAOI, there's more buying going on, insiders, and at 10, and now you can pick it up at 950, so it seemed like something to do.
Yep.
And then the big disappointment to me is the Twitter short got wiped out on the wrong side of it. It just like, okay, well, I'm not going to fool around with Twitter anymore. That's done. It's not on my trading list under any circumstances. And that's about it. So we just got the new things. I'm just going to go back to Advanced Optical because the fiber optic stuff is going. I was looking into that, by the way. So the reason that these fiber optic companies, a lot of them, and I think there's a buyout candidate, is that they've actually developed a new methodology, some new stuff to increase the bandwidth. And it's not to increase the bandwidth. They've already done so many things with fiber optics to increase the bandwidth. And it was getting kind of peaking out at 100 megabits per second. Now it's at a terabyte per second. They're using some sort of polarization tricks and a number of new ideas are cropped up to take the typical fiber optic screen and 10x it. So it was 100 before, now it's a terabyte.
Wow.
Terabyte bits, a terabit per second plus.
It's that fast. It's fast.
And so it's, there's a lot of action going on. I think that the fiber optics thing is gonna pay off for a lot of people.
Well, I have two picks, as I talked about earlier in the show. Royal Bank of Scotland.
Okay.
And Barclays.
All right, I want to be on the Barclays bandwagon, too.
Well, let's see how we do that. They're going to do a purple.
You have to make it purple.
The new one, I haven't done that before. On a new system, I'll have to do that. Let's see, purple right here.
It's too cheap.
Yeah. Okay, got
it. Royal Bank of Scotland is really cheap, but maybe I should do that one instead. But Barclays, I think, is a good bet.
Mm-hmm. All right, we got it. And we'll make sure that both of us have Barclays. And AAOI is on the list. Okay, that's good. You can check these out over on DH Unplugged as well. There's a kind of a live list of what's going on there. We've had some little glitches here and there on the tracking. It comes back. It works fine. Just check it back. If it's not on there at the moment that you see it for whatever reason, just check back. But during the day when the market's open, it's ticking away and telling you what's in, what's out, you know, and you kind of track what's going on with that. A lot of people go there because I get when the site's not working, when it's down here or there, whatever, plenty of people complain. They don't tell you how great it is, though.
They only complain.
They only complain.
Yeah. You know, yeah, somebody should just once in a while chime in something. And say, Andrew, you've done a great job with this.
John,
yeah,
man.
No, that never happened.
John, that was such a great idea. You know, it looks great, this site. No. Site's not working. you know, you're late on getting up the podcast up. No. Oh, thanks for getting it up early. No. But we
all
do.
Right.
So labor of love.
Well, I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Yep. We'll have to skip next week, obviously. And have fun in Myanmar or wherever the hell you're going.
Yeah, I'll send you some of my food pictures that you love so much.
It's a long way to get a meal. Yeah. Okay.
All right, I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
Thanks.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.